Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon Enyart.
And I am Aiden Wood.
How's it going, Aiden?
It's going.
It is going. How is the weather down there?
It's fine. It's slightly nippy.
That's what somebody said today. Up here, we're under about 5 inches of snow.
Oh, today it was like 55 degrees and I was out canvassing and I was like, I'm so cold. I'm such a wuss now.
The real feel yesterday was 0 degrees.
Yeah, I saw your tweet
Instagram
about
story.
That or whatever, or like, yeah, you're not happy.
No, I was watching tonight. Like, if I look at the weather app, I think it's supposed to, like, right now it's at 32 degrees, so we're at freezing. It feels like fucking spring right now. We get like 1 week where Washington wants to make us wish we were never born, and then it'll be normal, hopefully, after this.
Hey, can I talk about something that's been on my mind a lot lately, and it's also relevant to the podcast?
Sure.
I fucking hate thinking about politics nowadays, dude. I'm so fucking tired of politics. Like, I came into work today, maybe just because I have a new job. I have a new job doing canvassing for a local politician, so whereas at my old job, my like coworkers and my managers did not talk about politics. They were a small family-owned restaurant. They were like active in their community, but they didn't like talk about that stuff. So I like had a little break from it psychologically. And even though now I find my work more meaningful and I love like it's like a strangely great feeling to be able to talk about politics with your coworkers. Now it's all the fucking time for me. I am sick of it. I want to tear my brains out, and then I want to tear everybody else's brains out. I probably should do it in the other way. Other order, though.
Yeah, that would insist that you tore your own brains out, became a zombie, and then went after everybody else's brains.
Which is what zombies are known to. I guess I just want to be a zombie. Zombies, you know what? Everyone talks about how shitty the zombie apocalypse would be, but they don't have to, like keep up with the news and read about how, oh, Elizabeth Warren didn't shake Bernie Sanders' hand. Oh my god, is Bernie a sexist? Like, oh my god. Like, I guess technically I don't have to do that either. Like, I don't have to become a zombie to escape it. I could also just fucking turn off the news and walk away from the internet. But I guess I'm a masochist who likes to complain.
That's the one good thing about being a zombie. That's an advantage, is you are dead, but at least you do it. You know, it's funny because I enjoy talking about politics to an extent. I think that it's really interesting because we like to classify ourselves, or we don't like to, but we end up classifying ourselves as liberal or conservative.
Leftist, if you're edgy.
Leftist, liberal, progressive, go down the list, right? But the thing is, we do it more so that peers that might be political as we are, will not get the wrong idea as to where the majority of our policies lie, right? Mm-hmm. But you find out if you're very involved with any party in particular that you're not always going to agree with every part of and every policy that that party has, no matter what they are. And so it's tough for me because when I was working or volunteering as secretary for the Whatcom Democrats, and this is in no way trying to bash what they're doing. In fact, they're moving in a more progressive way. And I love the people on the executive board there. But it was so much, even though they were trying to go progressive, it was so much down a party line and it was so biased, which I'm biased. Like, I know that, but it was tough though to, be on the same team and yet also feel like you're also worlds apart from a lot of these people. Some of them did not have the same upbringing as I did when it comes to not having money or not having, some of them have a lot of money and they, you know, I think some of it's the small things and these might seem weird to you or maybe not you, but other people who are listening, but it was simple things. Like I remember, you know, I still just barely get by with what I make, right, from my job. And I remember this one simple thing where they're like, and everybody here on the executive board is has to bring a bottle of wine to the auction or whatever that's going to raise money for the party. And I get that. They want to raise money. They need to do stuff, whether it be canvassing, getting the vote out, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it was a must, right? Even though we're already volunteering time that we don't get paid for, it was a must. And I was like, well, you know, I'll go to Trader Joe's and get a bottle of wine. And the first thing they said, I didn't even say that. It's like they could read my mind. And they went, and none of that shit from Trader Joe's, and they didn't say shit, but none of that stuff from Trader Joe's, like a good bottle of wine. I'm like, fuck you. I can't even get a good, like, you know, if I drank, I couldn't get a good bottle of wine for myself. You know, and that seems like a simple thing. And it wasn't because, oh, I'm a cheapskate. It was because I was thinking that bottle of, I ended up getting hard cider, honestly, but that bottle of, it was a nice bottle of cider from Whole Foods. But that cider that I bought, I thought to myself, I could have put that money in so many different areas, even just that little bit of money.
Like buying bulk rice and beans.
Right, but I mean, even
feed
just
yourself through these hard winter months.
Well, and the fact that there's the homeless community here is so it's getting worse and worse. Somebody just died the other night, a homeless person outside of the mission here, and you know, and the first thing I did is that I went on to online. I ordered a large packet of tube socks, because that's a big thing. And whenever I see somebody who's outside and I'm driving past, I make sure that I hand them a pair of socks. And then if I have some spare change or whatnot. And that's where I'd rather direct that sort of stuff to, even the small amounts of money that I can give. I'd rather, you know, direct it that way. And it is, politics do have a way of just totally, you know, raking you over the coals. And so I get what you're saying, but yet there is a part of you that goes, when you see what's happening, as you go, but I do terribly want to be a part of this, because you do want to make a change, and we're led to believe that's the way to do it. Yeah, so of course, now this show is about politics, so...
We should probably explain, like, what's been going on for audience members who might be out of the loop. Most of our audience members are pretty in the loop, but do you want to explain it? Because I don't think I have it in.
So, yeah, I think the thing that's been talked over enough that we don't really need to necessarily debate here, I think that it was a losing thing for everybody, in all honesty, but obviously what's been going on between Warren and Bernie and the, you know, very various shades of gray that are being, you know, kind of walked around right now. And to be honest, I think the best way I heard it put last night on the show was that... It, you know, whether it was used for gain or whatever it ended up being, whether it's a misunderstanding, whether you're against Warren for thinking that she lied, or whether you believe that Bernie lied about, you know, saying that a woman couldn't be president. Somebody said they both did damage control, or Bernie did damage control that actually pretty much worked. You know, I think a few people called out him immediately saying, I beat an incumbent Republican. When she had mentioned that she was the only person to beat an incumbent Republican, he then pointed out that he did 30 years ago, and they said that didn't necessarily need to be said by him. And I tend to a little bit agree with that. But then again, he was saying something that was totally true. It just maybe wasn't the right timing. Basically, the way I feel is that he did the damage control properly. I mean, he made a ton of money yesterday in donations.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, you were saying, like it was a lose for everybody. And I think that in some ways it may have been a lose for Bernie, like, in the long run. Like, it could hurt his, like, support. It could hurt him in the polls. But in the short term, at least, he made a fuck ton of money. His campaign raked in so many donations.
And let me rephrase that. It was a lose for those of us who are fans of, you know, and I use it term fan, relatively speaking, toward politics of these candidates, because I think that it does put you do a decent job of seeing both sides. I tend not to, and I do make assumptions, which is weird for me because away from politics, I don't do that. But I do make assumptions as to how I feel it went, and so then I get a little bit, you know, like. And so I think the losing was for those of us, right? I don't think the candidates lost. I think that Elizabeth capitalized on whether, I'm not saying that she, you know, for the sake of argument here, I'm not going to say, you know, my personal feelings. If she, regardless of how that all came out or what was said, she did a good job of last night of answering the question that was provided to her. And making a gain there. Bernie did a good job of getting to his fan base, who absolutely went nuts, and sometimes in a negative way, and sometimes in a positive way, in the sense of that, you know, I mean, I was one of them who donated money. I wasn't one of the people who was putting the snake emoji everywhere.
I just want to say, like, because, like, there are people who, like, listen to our show who, like, don't follow politics super closely. Like, they're like up to date on the news, they watch the debates, but they aren't, like, glued to Twitter 24/7. So, like, just to summarize, some people who were close to Warren's campaign and were close to Warren revealed to CNN, or told CNN, that a year ago Bernie and Warren had a private meeting to have a private conversation. And at some point during that conversation, Warren asked Bernie if Bernie thought that a woman could be president. And according to Warren, Bernie said he didn't think that a woman could be president, or would, he didn't think that a woman could be Trump. According to Bernie, he said that Trump would weaponize, or he said that Trump is sexist and racist and would weaponize all that he could, including weaponizing gender, right. But didn't say that a woman couldn't be president and did not say that a woman couldn't be Trump. This was a year ago, a conversation that, and like in that time period, like there's been so much fucking shit that's happened. So many emotions. Everyone's on the campaign trail. Everyone's fucking tired. I can totally easily see how Bernie saying, like, Trump will weaponize sexism against you could easily be interpreted as, like the, your gender will work against you, which could easily be interpreted as, like, a woman can't win. Like, I can totally see how, like, especially Warren, who's been receiving messages like that from everywhere. Like, I even, like when Warren announced her candidacy, I had to, like, was arguing with people who were like, oh, I don't think that we should run a woman again after Hillary Clinton. Like, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, I was, like trying to defend, like, Warren on that stance from those people. So, like, totally, like, believe that she was getting a lot of that shit at the time period, and it probably felt, like, really demoralizing. I could totally see how, like, she may have, like, told people how that made her feel around her, who may have, like, held resentment against Bernie for, like, that implied slight. It's ultimately just seems like it's a miscommunication that's gotten out of hand after all this time and emotions on the campaign trail, and these resentments that have been brewing, especially inflamed by the rabid fan bases of both of the candidates.
Well, and CNN too, who tends to
I want to punch them. I want to punch them all in their faces. In a video game, of course.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yes. But yeah, I feel like Bernie probably could have handled it a lot better. Like, I think that if Bernie had said, like, I specifically said, that I felt like Trump would I believe that Trump would weaponize sexism because he is a sexist. I do think that a woman could win. I wholeheartedly believe a woman could be Trump. I apologize to Warren if you felt slighted by my comment. That's not how I intended it to be interpreted. And I do believe that you are a good candidate. I have always believed in you. And I hope that we can move on from this. It seemed like both, I feel like if he said that, instead of saying, well, I've never said that. I never said that. Like, I feel like we wouldn't need to continue to be talking about it, you know?
I'll say, I guess, a little bit of devil's advocate. I think that I don't think he was so harsh in his denying that he did it. I think that there is a point where less is more, and if you do apologize, the problem is that, especially if we are looking down the road to Trump, is that Trump will use things like, well, you apologize, you didn't have to apologize if you didn't say it, sort of thing. I felt, so I don't think he had anything to apologize for. I think that he did deny it, and he said, you know, and then he was asked, you know, for clarity's sake, so you did not say it, and he said, that is correct. It was very direct, and that's how Bernie is. He is very direct, and it's very monotone, and it's to the point. And, you know, and he did mention, he did go over the fact that, you know, the video from 30 years ago where he said that he believed the woman could be president, the fact that he actually did say that he supported Warren in 2015 and stepped back until she said she didn't want it. So I think those all speak to themselves. I think the less is more route is the way to go. So I felt like, so like I said, I think his damage control was all right. I think that
I think that it could have been better in terms of, like, really diffusing the tensions. I think that's some acknowledgement of the fact that, like, Warren felt hurt by, like, a comment that he made. I mean, I'm guessing, like, I wholeheartedly believe that he never said a woman couldn't be president. I 100% believe that. I also, like you said, he has a very blunt tone of voice, and he can definitely come off as being dismissive, and especially with a friend that he doesn't have his guard up with, you know, that he isn't, like, thinking about it. He could, I mean, like, people, like, accidentally hurt each other's feelings and slight each other all the time.
No, you're right. You're very right about acknowledging that
human element. Like, I'm sorry if I came off as dismissive. Like, just, like, any, like, acknowledgement of that emotion, or acknowledging, like, that she had that takeaway, and saying, I hope you don't feel discouraged, and I hope that any woman listening, like, feels encouraged. You know, like, just like that. Even, like, I don't think he really should need to, because I do think that, like, he is a great person who, like, is a feminist, but, like, it would have been ultimately, I think, better for him.
Yeah, I mean, you are right that we do sometimes say things that are taken the wrong way. I've even been in that position before, where I've been told, and to this day, I still will think about conversations I had that maybe even, you know, ruined a friendship. And I go, oh my God, that was totally taken the wrong way. And so, no, I do agree with you. And there's no reason, I don't think there would have been any hurt in saying, and you know, I sincerely hope that if it was taken any other way, that you realize that I support you. I think that even saying that I always support you and your candidacy, I think that's, you can even say that without necessarily apologizing, because the media will twist an apology, unfortunately. And I know that I always support you, you know, I think is a great way to go about it. You know, I think John Iadarola from the Young Turks, I'll paraphrase a bit what he said, but I think what he said makes a lot of sense. And what possibly happened, which was that we know that probably Bernie did talk about how Trump will weaponize race or gender going into this election, right? Mm-hmm. And what he probably said was what you just mentioned, right? That he will weaponize the fact that you're a woman, and that's something to be prepared for, whatever. And all it takes is for a couple staffers, like you mentioned, everybody's tired. All it takes is for a couple staffers after that meeting to say, did you hear what he said, Elizabeth? He said that he doesn't believe a woman can win the presidency against Trump.
Well, it was a private meeting. I don't think that there were any staffers there. It was just between Warren and Bernie.
Okay, so let's just say, and let's just say that it was, but even when she talked about the meeting. It can be said that, that's what he said. And suddenly, as you start to replay that back in your head over and over again, as time goes on, and as the you know, it being fresh in your mind starts to get a little bit more stale, what you heard can sometimes turn into something a little bit different than what it was. And I think that's definitely very possible. It's something he said. And like I mentioned as well, with him being very direct with how he, and very, with how he talks, because a lot of people call Bernie the angry old man. And it's so funny, because if you see him on campaign stops with AOC and, you know, on her Instagram stories and stuff like that, he's a happy guy, actually. He's got a smile on his face. He's very caring. But when he is in debate mode or that mode, he can come across as very, very coarse and direct. And that doesn't always, I think that's a reason why sometimes not just female voters, but especially female voters sometimes feel a bit like maybe he is, you know, the angry old man who is still kind of set in his ways or something of that sort. And I get what you're saying. And I think that, yeah, I don't think it really hurt anything in the grand scope of things. I think that
it hurt Warren and Bernie's friendship for sure, which is
okay. That's true. Yes,
and
it is.
Oh my god! Like there. Did you hear the audio that was leaked from CNN? Released from CNN of like what they were saying after the debates when Bernie reached out his hand to offer a handshake and Warren refused.
Right, and, you know, and the funny thing is that we talk about CNN, and you mentioned, you know, wanting to punch their face in a video game. It was really bizarre to watch them post debate, because they attacked Tom Steyer. I mean, you know, they instead of talking about anything about what Tom had to say during the debate, it was immediately, it's like watching a gossip thing anymore. You were like, Tom, what did they say? What did they say? And it's like, and Tom's kind of, for the one part in this, I felt bad for Tom, because he's
Steyer was actually like so adorable.
But I mean, yeah, he's like,
okay, before we continue, for listeners who are familiar with the context, basically, like, after the debate, Warren, like, immediately went to Bernie, and Bernie, like, put out his hand, and this was, like, off mic when it was aired. Bernie put out his hand, and Warren rejected it, and, like, said something to Bernie, and then Bernie, like, helped, like, said something else, and then they walked away. Behind this, Tom Steyer was, like, standing behind them, kind of awkwardly, like, I don't want to interrupt, but I want to say hi to Bernie, but it feels like you guys got some tension going on. He was, like, so uncomfortable. He looked like a little puppy. I saw a meme that said, that had Warren labeled as my friend's angry mom, and then Bernie was labeled as my friend's angry dad, and then Tom Steyer was labeled me asking where I can get the cups.
That's so true. Yeah,
it was so cute. Anyways, so Tom Steyer was like uncharacteristically adorable. And Bernie,
what I was gonna say too is, so like when I watched Tom during that whole exchange, like I've been there before, right? Where you're like, you're just trying to go and say goodbye to somebody after like the party's over, which I don't go to a lot of parties, but the few times that I have, and there's like some sort of heated exchange going on, and you're just like, what do I do here? Now I'm sitting here, I have to wait this out, but I really don't want to be a part of this. And I could just see his face looking back at both of them going, oh shit. This is the wrong place to come. Not to go away from this, you have more to say on the matter, but what I will say is when it comes to actual the rest of the field, some people have mentioned they think this benefits Biden. I don't fully see that. I see it benefiting Brezhnev a bit, just because I feel like last night Biden had every opportunity, maybe you're going to disagree with me here, to capitalize on what was the tension between Bernie and Elizabeth and just doing his own thing. And Biden falters so badly in these positions. Like, I thought he was the only person that was worse than Biden last night was Klobuchar.
Okay, and, before we get into this, because we're going to go down a whole other path, I just want to say, I'm going to splice in the audio from CNN.
Okay.
About that was released of Warren and Bernie being confronted.
I think you called me a liar on national TV.
What?
I think you called me a liar on national TV.
Let's not do it right now. You want to have that discussion? We'll have that
Anytime.
Discussion. You called me. You told me. All right, let's not do it now.
I don't want to get in the middle, but I just want to say hi, Bernie.
Yeah, good.
It's a treat to
okay.
See.
People were saying that Warren knew that the mics were still on, like knew that there were hot mics around, and didn't step away from the microphones before running up to Bernie to confront him. And it's like clearly conspiracy. Clearly she planned it. It was like a planned attack, which is just like so conspiratorial. And like when you watch it, like she has like so much like anger, like she feels like slighted, like she feels like very insulted. And I definitely think it was unprofessional and she totally should have stepped away. But like also like she feels like betrayed by a friend, regardless of whether or not you think she actually was. I'm just saying it's like, and like even like after their confrontation earlier in the debate, like I've commented later, like she seems like she's has like two parts of her, and like one part of her is like trying to like is like ready to like fucking Hulk out, like she looked so had like this like anger inside her, and then there was like another part of her that was like holding herself back, and like it was like very intense, like I could tell like she was keeping a lot of shit like under control, or trying to keep a lot of shit under control. Definitely some of that anger leaked out, but I don't think that, I feel like she's just like pissed off and tired and has been like on the campaign trail for a long time. And I think that's like human and understandable. I do think that like I'm still voting for Bernie, and I do think that like Bernie's like actions and ability to maintain his professionalism and maintain like that control and like is more easily like is more presidential. And like his ability to try and de-escalate the situation like after that was also very admirable. Okay, anyways, continue.
I think that with last thing I'll say on that is that I think that there are a lot of things from unfortunately a lot of those were spurred on by Trump and such. I think the problem with Elizabeth right now and why she's facing maybe not as much of a gain from all this as maybe even Bernie is I think that there is a question of when she's been goaded into things in the past and mm-hmm. where she's embellished things and then where mm-hmm. and for me that's hard and I wouldn't call out people who have been fans of Elizabeth, because let's be real, if we're talking about what we had back in 2016 where we really only had the one decision, we wanted Bernie but we knew that Hillary was going to get, you know, that was our only, you know, that we're not in that position, and I don't want it to become that. Mm-hmm. I think that that's, for me, obviously, who, you know, I'm unabashedly a Bernie supporter. Of course, you know me, too. I also am a conspiracy theorist at times when it comes to politics. And so, of course, the things go through my mind. That being said, I hope that just for everybody's sake, I guess the best, most political thing I can say right now is that I hope that this is that we do start to move on from this.
Yeah,
and that when it comes to caucus, that's going to be where everything starts talking. Right. When people start voting, that's when we know who's going to be the front runner. Who are we? In my case, is it going to be somebody who I didn't really want, but I'm going to have to find a way to support and figure out why, not figure out why, because we know why, but, you know, but start to restructure my, you know, way of supporting this candidate. And or is it going to be the candidate who I wanted all along, and am I finally going to get that opportunity? Or is it going to be the third one where I don't even know if I want to vote for the guy? And so,
which person would that be?
Biden.
Oh.
Because, you know, I, regardless of whatever happened, you know, anything short of Warren switching parties, you know, I made a promise that I would vote Warren. If not, if Bernie didn't get the nomination, I'll stand by that promise. When it comes to, there will be no sour grapes there. When it comes to Biden, you know, I know people will fault me for this because I didn't vote for Hillary and I got faulted for that, you know, nearly 4 years ago. But I can't. It's funny because there are parts about him, like away from politics, where what's funny is he's the only one that makes Bernie laugh, Biden. I'm not sure for what reason, but you watch Bernie laugh at him. Maybe it's because Bernie's laughing at him, not with him. But I mean, but he does make Bernie laugh. Now, supposedly Warren and Biden hate each other, but I didn't see that last night, or I haven't really seen it in the debates, in my opinion. I don't think that he's as unlikable as he is to us, because I can't stand the guy. But I think that the candidates all seem to get along with him decently well. But getting into what I was saying before we went back to the Elizabeth Bernie thing, but I think he failed terribly last night. Like I said, I think the only person that was worse than him was Amy Klobuchar. And I thought he was just awful last night.
I mean, like, the thing about Biden is that him and faltering and not completing sentences is kind of like Trump and lying, which is, it happens so often that it's just sort of like, yeah, that's Biden. That's Trump. He's just spewing bullshit and like slurs and, or not slurs, but like, he's just like insulting people all the time, Trump.
Right.
And so it's just like another day, you know? It's like, it was just like another Tuesday for Biden.
I just felt there were so many, like, because he had a decent debate before this one. And I thought that last night was the point where you can go, these two are feuding, I capitalize on this. And he was just, he's...
But that's a lot to ask of Biden. That involves, like, thinking on your feet and, like, having a situational awareness. And I don't know if he's ready for that.
No, Klobuchar, she had the issue last night where, am I the only one who caught that, where she was talking about, was it a governor of Arkansas or somebody in Arkansas, I believe, and
she has struggled remembering a name.
Couldn't remember the name, and she almost did like the John Travolta with Idina Menzel, where he said, and she almost did that. She was like, so, and she's like, she said before, I'm so glad to know this person.
Yeah, she was like really hyping it up, and then she like continued hyping this person up to buy herself time to remember her name, and it was extremely awkward.
Oh, so bad. And she was constantly looking at notes, which they all do. I'm not gonna, you know, say she's, but she was definitely not on her game. It was, and Pete.
Also, before we move on, and I know it's like sexist to like criticize a woman's appearance instead of like the things that she's saying, but her eyebrow.
The eyebrows, what you see. It's funny because Saturday Night Live picked up on the fact that she has that hair that comes down that shakes the whole time. And so Saturday Night Live, whenever they have...
I don't watch Saturday Night Live. But the other thing... So she had this like eyebrow that was cocked up. And at first I was like, wow, she like really is like cocking her eyebrows. She's like really holding that expression for a while. And then I realized like, I think it might be painted on, and it just might be a really bad painted on eyebrow, because like you could see like the arch, like the bone where the eyebrow should have been, and it was like permanently arched above that. But then I always watch the debates in my office, my canvassing office, like with my coworkers, and my coworkers were like, no, I think it's just really bad Botox. But it's like all we could talk about when she was on screen, because it was so distracting, because I'm pretty sure it was just a really badly painted on eyebrow. Her blush was also distracting. It was like I am like someone who like you wear whatever you want to wear, put whatever you want on your face. Like I don't, like if I saw her like around like wearing that really gaudy makeup just around, I wouldn't think twice. But because it was on a debate stage, like it was just distracting, you know, like I couldn't look away. And like ideally you just want people to be able to focus on your words.
Well, and so I will say, since you don't watch SNL, and since I do, so yeah, the thing was, it was funny about that is that I had, you know, I don't like to call out anybody's appearance either, but it's funny, I kept bringing up the fact that she has that piece of hair that just falls, and it's perfect every time. It falls right, and it just, like, it shakes the whole time. And I thought, am I the only one who's noticing this? Am I just, like, weirdly obsessive, you know, with obsessive compulsive with this stuff? And then on Saturday Night Live, Rachel Dratch plays her on Saturday Night Live. And they, like, literally made the whole part of her talking about her hair shaking in front of it. So I luckily was not the only one to be thinking that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but did it seem like Pete Buttigieg had less time to talk last night than Tom Steyer even? Or
I have no idea. We could look at the stats. Honestly, I didn't see the stats. He just said a lot of really – I honestly don't remember – anything Pete said. Like,
he was really quiet last night.
The only thing I remember thinking, this is again another meaningless appearance thing, but his eyes looked really blue.
Yeah, they know.
And he was
wearing
a blue tie. I was thinking, does that bring it out? But it was because like Joe Biden's gaffes, like, and like his like fumbling was like very memorable, and then obviously the Biden war and stuff was super memorable, and then CNN's like extremely biased like questions towards Bernie was like obscenely biased, like so like bad. Normally they're better at masking that, so like masking like at least trying to put on a veneer of respectability and like non-bias, but like they were intensely biased, and it was like I think that more than the Bernie Warren conflict, I think that CNN's treatment of Bernie was probably like a big driver of the donations last night.
No, you're right, because I mean they basically essentially, you know, I wouldn't say compared him to Ayatollah, but they basically said, well, you agree, basically along the lines of you agree with Ayatollah and Iran, and I mean it's just the way they were phrasing things, and I don't know who phrased that question. They had, I didn't recognize two of the moderators. Of course, Wolf Blitzer was one of them. But the way that they were phrasing these questions was just, it was bizarre. It was CNN. It's funny because MSNBC, which I always used to think was just way far left, almost like the Fox News of the left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And MSNBC made more sense today and yesterday than CNN did. CNN has, I hate to say it because I feel like every time I say CNN's a joke, I feel like I'm feeding into what Donald Trump says, right? Which is the media.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it's one thing to like say like anything, every bit of media that I disagree with is like a joke,
news,
which
right,
I definitely think that there are people on the left who have been doing, and it's very annoying.
Right.
But it's another thing to make specific targeted criticisms about, like, and that's really important. Like, journalists need to be held accountable if there's like errors in a story. Like, people need to correct, like call it out and correct it so that they can update their story to reflect the truth. Like, and like if there's like a clear conflict of interest, like Washington Post specifically not reporting on Amazon because Jeff Bezos fucking owns the Washington Post, like that's something that we can like address.
Right.
You know? Like if we have like specific, clear, targeted criticisms and we have evidence of conflict of interest and we have facts to back it up, I don't think that we should just like not criticize media. Also, speaking of which, like, this idea that, like, oh, just because Trump does something vaguely similar means that, like, we cannot do this thing, like,
is
fucking ridiculous. Like,
no, I understand.
I read, so the New York Times is doing this thing called The Choice where they're releasing all of their endorsement interviews that they had with the different candidates, like transcribed word for word and even annotated by the New York Times, sometimes really snarkily annotated by the New York Times. It's kind of weird. But they asked Bernie, like, how are you going to get these bold proposals passed if you have a Republican Senate? And he was basically saying, like, I have a fundamentally different way of approaching politics. I'm not playing a political game in Washington. I'm going to go out and talk to people and hold rallies in support of these already popular proposals and energize people to talk to their senators so that they can put pressure on their senators and their elected officials and use their voice. I want to empower people to use their voice, essentially. That's Bernie's fucking whole thing. Hashtag not me, us. Like, he's trying to build working class consciousness and trying to, like, use the power of the people and popular support to push through proposals. And the New York Times was like, but Trump flies around the country holding rallies. How are you any different than Trump? And it's like, Trump is not a bad person and a bad president because he holds rallies.
Right.
He's a bad
right.
person and a bad president because people are dying and people are in cages and because he's like inherently divisive and like escalates situations and has no control over his emotions. Like, Trump is a bad president for a whole host of reasons. It's like, AOC like uses Twitter a lot and like has a popular Twitter
you're
following.
You're right. No, it's
That's
true,
kind
yeah.
of like what Donald Trump does. And it's like, do you guys just hate effective tactics? Do you hate learning
right.
about what works well in politics to utilize those tactics? Or because like the first person who just discovered like, oh, this particular social media tactic works really well, if that person who first discovers that social media tactic works well is a bad person. Now we can't touch that social media tactic. Right. Otherwise, it'll be impure. Like, it's so fucking ridiculous. Similarly, it's like when people say, sorry, I'm ranting for so long, but it's like when people say like Antifa wears masks, the KKK wears masks, so Antifa is like the KKK. The KKK kills people! The KKK kills people, and that is why the KKK is bad! The KKK is not bad because they put on a mask! Dumb asses!
And because they're white supremacist racists
and
as well.
And because they're white supremacist racists! Yeah.
So my worry about why I worry when I say that CNN is a joke is not so much rooted in because Trump says it, but because of when people make a media outlet out to be fake or a joke. The problem is that because it is a source that people look to for information, they then start to it starts to be something that you can weaponize. That being said, the media is also responsible for that. And so if they are not giving if they're not asking reliable journalistic questions, and if they are not breaking stories, that I thought a big moment, again, regardless of what you think happened between Bernie and Warren, a big moment last night was when I forget her name, I apologize, but one of the pundits at the end of it said, for Bernie to flat out deny it, this was reported on, Bernie. This was a story. There's nothing to deny here. It's not he said, she said.
But
and,
like, this, and so, the whole story is, the whole, like, story, all the journalistic evidence is Warren said this. Like,
right. So, but what I was going to say was, is that, so they reported on it that, and so I saw Anderson Cooper on the sideline, kind of, you know, Anderson, I think, has a lot of integrity, or at least more compared to some other people on in the media. And I could see him kind of squirming, and he's like, well, to be fair, it is a he said, she said story. You know, at the end of the day, that is what it is, because we only had two people, or at least I don't know if it was just them. I did think there was other people, but anyways, let's just say it was just them in that meeting. So then it literally is a he said, she said story, because there is no evidence anywhere that says who said what. And so, but I think that was an important thing there, because she decided that she was going to, that because CNN reported it, that it was, that made it gospel, essentially. Whereas, you know, at least Anderson Cooper had the presence of mind to say, well, hold on, we reported what was allegedly said, not what was, we basically reported the he said, she said. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, and that's important to make that distinction, because people will hear this and see CNN reported on it, and because they want that headline that gets clicks on Twitter, or they want or on Facebook, wherever people are getting that from, or the headline that you watch on TV. They want that, and so the headline is, as much as I hate this term, it's clickbait. And and then when you read the story, you go, oh, okay, wait, so this is what it actually is. And but people who don't read through the whole thing, I'm not gonna say this pundit did or didn't read through the whole thing, but she had it made up in her mind that's what the report was, when in fact the report was on the story, which was at the end of the day he said, she said story. But what I did want to talk about when it comes to policy that was discussed last night, because this is something that I feel very strongly about, and maybe I'm, well, maybe, like I said, maybe people disagree with me, and that's okay. But I find the discussion of free college very interesting to me, because Klobuchar and I believe Steyer, and did Padejaj as well say that he believed that the richest should pay for the rich? Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
So Padejaj, Steyer, and Klobuchar all, you know, double down almost to make themselves out to be more against the rich, even though we know Warren and Sanders both have these extensive high income tax rate plans. They tried to like make it out like, oh, they were somehow above Bernie and Elizabeth because they feel that rich people should pay for their kids to go to school, while only people who can't afford for their kids to go to college should get free public school. And I have a real problem with that. And the reason why is because I believe public schools should be free for everyone. And that includes rich people, because one, rich kids are not going to go to public school. At least the majority of them aren't. They're going to go to private schools. And that's what's going to happen anyways. The problem I have is that as soon as you turn public school into something only for people who don't have the income to pay for school, it becomes low-income school. And what happens is that suddenly you have classism again, and where they can now just as we see with healthcare, when they say you are on Medicaid and why they so badly want the public option, because then basically they can say you get baseline while the people who can afford it, their health means more to us. That's what this essentially what this would do, in my opinion. If you can pay for school, then you get the best school. If you can't pay for it, it becomes low-income school. And mm-hmm. they don't have to provide what is provided for it creates this division in class. Mm-hmm. It's not, although they make it sound like it's against the rich, it's still actually protecting the rich.
And it's and putting any sort of means testing in place, like any like bar that people have to like reach before they get to have access to these public like resources, means testing programs are like are way more inefficient because like the resources yeah. you put into trying to test people, they it's just like a waste of resources, and people are going to slip through the cracks. There's going to be people who have like various life circumstances in place, like maybe like their parents technically make a certain income level, but their parents are also abusive assholes, like who they need to like get away from, you know, like there's so many different factors yeah. in place. So means testing programs tend to create resentment between people who do have access to them, lower income people, and people who do not have access to them. They're like, oh, my taxpayer money's paying for your education. Like, it's like we need to get rid of this program because it's like unfair and unethical. Universal programs don't create that type of resentment because yeah. everyone has access to it. It just becomes part of the normal social infrastructure.
Right.
Are we like same with like public school, like public K-12 and libraries, and like, I mean, like, imagine if you went to a library and they were like, okay, like we're gonna need to see all of your income forms, and we're going to need yeah. to check to see if you are able to have access to these books.
Otherwise, we want your bank statements.
Oh, wait, you're a billionaire, you can't check out a book from this library, go yep. buy your own. Like, that's fucking crazy. Like, it's yep. just a library, like, let people access it.
Exactly. 100% agree with you that you just added even to what I was saying even better. And no, it's so true. It's and the problem what happens is too is it is a way of what always happens, which is this way of actually saying once you start to make a certain amount of money, because inevitably there is a cutoff, and I'm sure they would mm-hmm. argue right now that it's millionaires and whatever, but it doesn't always work out that way. Because for instance, when let's just talk about healthcare, because that's one where we've seen it actually put into place recently, right, with the Affordable Care Act. So when I was in the car accident and I didn't have a job, right, because I couldn't work for over a year, I had everything paid for free, right? But it's baseline. You get sent to where they want to send you. You don't get to pick your doctor. There's a very limited amount of doctors, and most of them are actually volunteering from their normal practice at a Medicare-approved or, in my case, Apple Health-approved place. But I will say on the upside, even though it's baseline, at least my prescriptions were paid for, and at least I could actually do some preventative health care for myself. Whereas if I had a copay or whatever, I wouldn't be as likely to, because I have to make rent and I always have a budget of a certain amount of money that I know I have to put away for each month. Now, the problem is then I get a job. And it's not a great paying job, but it's a good, it's a paying job. I can pay my bills as they are, not really have a lot of extra, but I can pay my bills. Now, the problem is because the cutoff is at whatever it is, 16 grand a year, I think, to where you can be considered for Apple Health, for Medicaid, that now suddenly I have to pay for healthcare. And on top of that, if I need to use it, I have a copay. I have a deductible that is actually really large, mm-hmm. And so that's their way of saying, well, now you make more money. Well, too bad, man. You're not gonna have any extra to put away or anything, because now you're gonna have to buy the stuff that you've been using. And they're weaponizing your own health against you, saying, do you want to be healthy or do you want to you're having to pick between which one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's. We can talk about not having dental care covered for another day, because that one's outrageous. That we actually choose, are we going to get a tooth fixed, right, when they're actually like a part of our nervous system?
Can I talk about that real quick? Because my manager at my old restaurant, like I mentioned, like my managers like did not like to talk about politics. They weren't political people, but they would like come in and they would like complain like all the time about like the homeless population and like the way it impacted right. their business. And they would complain about the lack of parking in the area and how it's driving away customers. And then my manager once complained about like, yeah, I've had this toothache for like weeks and it's like so painful, but like I can't afford to like go get it like taken care of. And I was like, I wanted to scream. I was like, please, please get involved with politics, please. Like, if I wasn't your employee, if you couldn't fire me at will, which is another political issue, like, if you could just, like, fire me whenever, like, I like, would just, like, please get involved with politics. These are actual issues being discussed. You can have a voice, right. You know?
Well, yeah, and it's true because even in Canada until recently, they didn't have dental as part of their universal health care. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is so overlooked and it's so important. I'll be totally upfront and honest here. I have, you know, mine aren't the worst, but I have a broken tooth. It's not terribly broken, but I've never done anything about it. Now, would you do that to a bone in your body? Would you go, I got a broken leg, but you know what? Can't do much about it. Just gotta go and, you know,
see if it heals. There are people who do.
Sadly there are because of the state we're in. But when it comes to, you know, I personally, healthcare is the top for me because I feel that when you weaponize health against citizens, I think it's just absolutely outrageous and it's disgusting and it's unethical and it's inhumane. But the problem is that education is another thing that is absolutely important. And by the way, we could go into a lot. I don't believe you have to go to college to be something. That's not my point here. I would love to see more apprenticeship programs. I would love to see more learn on the job programs, right? Where you maybe the minimum wage is reserved only for those learning their vocation until they have learned it after a certain amount of years, and then they get paid above minimum wage. I think that's the only thing I would reserve minimum wage for. But I still think it would be better than going into debt for some of these jobs and not actually learning on the job. But anyways, we can discuss that a different day. But when it does come to education of whatever kind it might be, whether it is college or technical school or if it ends up being apprenticeships and such, the fact that they want to weaponize by saying, you know, this is where you get to be. And then depending on what they decide is who is rich enough to go to college for poor enough to go to college for free, right? Once you start to do that, then the people who go just above that line, and we know that college is expensive as fuck. So now suddenly, if it isn't, because I just doubt it's only going to be over the certain million mark, that person suddenly is going to be like, I've worked really hard to get to this point in my life where I'm making a decent amount in my job, and now I'm the one who's going to have to pay for it, even though the guy who's making, you know, $500 less or $2,000 less, whatever, a year, is going to get it for free for his kids or whatever. And universal is the way to go. It's even when, you know, I don't agree with Yang on a lot of stuff, but why with universal income, people go, why would you give the rich money? Well, it's because that's the only way you can do it. That way, at the end of the day, that's what we're working toward, is that everybody has that opportunity to have something. And then when it comes to healthcare or education, now if you are the rich fuck who doesn't want to send their kids to the lowly public school, you know, then you can send your kid to private school. I mean, it's literally the difference if you live in the Bay Area of having free college at Cal Berkeley or having private school at Stanford, and they're only, 40 minutes away from each other, you know? So, I mean, that's what you're looking at there. And so, yeah, I really hated how Klobuchar and Steyer and Buttigieg turn that around to be something that they were so progressive about, when in fact it's just not. It's completely the opposite. And what Warren and Bernie, what their feelings are on college, are, that is the way it should be.
Yeah. Also, kind of going back to the healthcare discussion, I really liked a moment in the debate where Buttigieg was like, my plan will only cost $1 trillion. He was like, a lot, but their plan will cost $23 trillion. And Warren was like, yeah, that's because people are like, your plan isn't going to do anything. Like, that's because your plan, doesn't, actually address the problem, yeah. You know? Like, the reason these plans are expensive is because it is a huge project to vastly improve American lives, to create essentially an entire new infrastructure, an entire new administrative system, that needs to be developed over a period of time. Plus, vocational training to insurance employees who are going to lose their job. It's a big undertaking,
right,
that will make America vastly better and vastly also more economically prosperous in the future, because we're taking care of this really critical need, because we're not going to have people dying so often of preventable, right, diseases. We aren't going to have people wasting time that could be spent on productive things driving to doctors hours away because the doctors that are in their area are out of network. We're not going to have people spending hours and hours on phones with insurance companies arguing. We're not going to have people, like, putting off, like, preventable, like care for years because they can't afford copays and deductibles. Like, there's so much actual cost. There's so much, like actual human cost, and then also, like, actual, like, economic cost from having, like, a workforce that is, like that is sick and it ailing and also wasting so much time on this stuff. I'm so angry.
And also, Warren and Bernie also have plans in there for mental health care, which are things that are that right now aren't dealt with in the proper way and well enough. And so that's another thing with mental health that becomes something that that suddenly you will see a change in. And on top of that, we also, you know, it is my feeling that you will start to keep pharmaceutical companies in check, which means that the, you know, a lot of the reason we have people who can't afford to live somewhere and are homeless is because they're hooked on opioids. Not all of them, but there's a good percentage of them. And if we're not just willy-nilly prescribing opioids and instead are actually dealing with somebody's ailment, like you mentioned, preventative, whatever it might be, in the proper way, and we create a system that is meant to give us the best, most healthy lives, not just to keep us alive as long as it's beneficial to the system, right? Because the sicker we are, the more the insurance companies benefit. And as long as we're alive, just barely. It opens so many doors. And on top of that, when everybody's asking how to pay for it, they never bring up several different things. We already pay for Medicare on our paychecks, right? So that will be folded into what will become a new tax that, yes, you will pay off of your paycheck on, but that's already happening. I realize that it has its troubles right now because Republicans have tried to, you know, to make cuts to it. But if we can, but we still, it's still something that comes out of our paycheck, right? And so you're going to add to that. On top of that, you are also going to have the fact that people go to so if I wouldn't have had full coverage, or if I would have been at fault for the car accident I had, that night, the first thing they did was they go, what is your income basically? When I say, oh, it's this and that, but, you know, blah, you know, and they're like, oh, well, if you can't afford it, boom, they get you the papers for bridge assistance where I was. And they say, you have to sign up for this, and you have to get going with this now, so that basically we can use taxpayers' money that we put in a fund. We can use that to pay for the fact that you can't pay for it, or we put you on some sort of payment plan. And a lot of people end up, when they are on those plans, or because, I mean, you can have bills. Mine would have been somewhere around, I forget what it was. I think the medical bills alone were somewhere around $100,000. And when you have that amount of money going toward, my injuries weren't as bad as some people's are, people file for medical bankruptcy. So at I can't remember the exact number, but the amount of people, not the amount of money, but just the amount of people who file for medical bankruptcy in this country, that would be gone. You don't have people who are, because, you know, that all has to be taken, that all has to come out of somewhere. In some one way or the other, it's coming out of the taxpayers. And so, yes, you will pay more on your taxes, but you're not paying for insurance. You're not paying copays. You're not paying deductibles. You're not paying for, I think, that barely any of your prescription costs. And you're staying healthier. So you're probably making more money as well. And they never bring those things up. They never bring up the fact that we already have Medicare being paid for, that some of us, who knows, we won't get to use it. Well, hopefully we'll have single payer by then. But they never bring that up. And they never bring up, like I said, the fact that how many people go bankrupt each year and what that costs the country, what that costs taxpayers. The fact that when you go into the emergency room, they can't turn you away. It's the law. They cannot. So if you cannot afford it, they have to treat you. And if that's $200,000, I mean, I got a hospital stay for one night. It's something like $12,000, you know. And I mean, so you have somebody who's in for 2 weeks. I mean, you do the math. You know, that's we're up around $300,000. So that alone is that somebody's gonna have to file for bankruptcy if they end up hitting that mark and they don't have insurance. And so I mean we've talked about the healthcare so many times on this show, and maybe some people get tired of it, but for me, I'm so passionate about it, and it is number one on my list when it comes to a candidate. And you know, the good news is, if you are talking about the two candidates that we usually talk about, you know, Bernie's is he would like to make us feel like it's immediate. Obviously, it's not going to be. It has to go through Congress and the Senate and such. But even if it ends up being Warren, she is somebody who's saying it's going to start this way. And hopefully, what I would hope, I hope she stays true to that, that it would transition to fully, Medicare for all system. And so at least we have that. I know we're trending there. I mean, it's something that independents care about. Mm-hmm. This isn't, it's funny. They bring up what the Senate feels. Yeah, this, of course the Senate feels that way because the Senate is primarily held by the establishment. But guess what? Progressives have made ground each year. We're going to get there. They can slow it down, but they're not going to stop us. We're going to get single payer healthcare at some point because it's not just liberals who want it. It's not just leftists. It is independents who want it. And by the way, some Republicans who also want it, Republican voters. Mm-hmm. And so it's coming. So you guys can all keep delaying it, but you're losing the fucking war, and I can guarantee that.
Very well said. Also, I've been getting a lot of notifications that Adobe Audition's primary cache is low on space. So I've had to close out of like a bajillion little notifications, and I think that we should wrap up before I have to shut down Audition.
So what I will say then to wrap it up, the best part about last night, Ron Reagan's commercials.
The atheist. Oh, and also worst part of the night, the E-Verify commercials.
E-Verify? Did I miss those?
They miss us the hiring service that like helps you like not hire any illegal immigrants to save America.
Oh God, yes.
Oh my God,
right.
But E-Verify
yes.
is a shitty service that basically like it's a way of like making sure employers don't hire undocumented immigrants, and like the fact that was like playing during the debates was like. Aggressive. I was like, read the fucking room, CNN. Like, this is not the audience for that.
I laugh at the concept of that because I come from an agricultural area, and if they feel that the people hiring illegal immigrants don't know they're hiring illegal immigrants, they are so full of fucking shit. Because the reason that they do it is because they can pay them shit wages and get away with it, which is terrible and inhumane.
And in some cases, and because
wrong.
There aren't any like Americans, like citizens.
Oh, absolutely.
They need workers at all.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, the reason why they would rather hire an illegal immigrant rather than even a legal immigrant is because they can pay illegal immigrants next to nothing, and they know the legal immigrants aren't going to say a word because they don't want to say a word because they're not here legally. So those places seek out illegal immigrants to hire. So yeah, that's fucking hilarious. But anyways, Ron Reagan's I just love that he ended those commercials with and I don't know exactly what it was, but I don't care though.
Guys, this isn't, we aren't talking about Ronald Reagan, we're talking about
I'm sorry,
a guy
from an
organization called Freedom From Religion. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is just an atheist organization,
right? And which is, that is Ron Reagan Jr., is it not?
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, that's Ron Reagan's
I'd have to look it up.
Let me make sure.
I thought it was just another dude named Ron Reagan.
Yeah. No, he's the son. I just looked
really?
It up.
Really?
I was sure. I just...
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a plot twist.
You were making me second guess myself. But it was pretty funny because, yeah, Freedom From Religion Foundation's Honorary Board of Distinguished Achievers, Reagan appeared in an advertisement for broadcast on Comedy Central for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which he has declared himself an unabashed atheist and one who is not afraid of burning in hell, which was the part that I love. That commercial is from Comedy Central in 2014, and that's the same one that was played last night, basically. I thought that was great. Yeah, his liberal views contrast those of his late father, Republican United States President Ronald Reagan. Same name, though. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening to me and Aiden discuss the debates last night. We've got three debates coming up in February. I don't know if we have the energy to deal with that. Thankfully, after that, it's over. But can you believe that the next debates we'll see will be Donald Trump against one of them? Although, supposedly, I've heard rumor he says he refuses to debate before this next election. So that's something I guess we have to watch.
It's almost like he has authoritarian tendencies and doesn't want to give people, like, to give the voters all the information they can get.
I don't think that's what Trump would do. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that to see. Not that I necessarily want to see him debate, but I do want to see him debate because it's part of the process. But yeah, everybody, thank you so much. You know, you can listen to my other podcast, Lemonade Magazine podcast. It's got music, got interviews, and new music each week. Aiden's got Welcome to the Family, which you can also check out. The links are in the description of this podcast. Once again, thank you, and stay dope, everybody.